Chapter 24. Orphan. The girl, for all her experience, was still too innocent, and indeed not yet sufficiently aware of herself as a woman, to mistrust these unmasked approaches. She did not see them, in fact. She thought him sympathetic, the first expressively sympathetic person as he had ever met. She was so innocent that she could not understand the fury of the German woman. For, as you may imagine, the wifely penetration was not to be deceived for any great length of time the more, so that the wife was older than the husband. The man with the peculiar cowardice of respectability never said a word in Flora's defense. He stood by, and heard her reviled in the most abusive terms, only nodding and frowning vaguely from time to time. It will give you the idea of the girl's innocence, when I say that at first she actually thought this storm of indignant reproaches was caused by the discovery of her real name, and her relation to a convict. As he had been sent out under an assumed name, a highly recommended orphan of honorable parentage. Her distress, her burning cheeks, her endeavors to express her regret for this deception were taken for a confession of guilt. "Who attempted to bring dishonor to my home?" the German woman screamed at her. "Here's a misunderstanding for you." Flora de Barrel, who felt the shame, but did not believe in the guilt of her father, retorted fiercely, "Nevertheless, I am as honorable as you are." And then the German woman nearly went into a fit from rage. "She'll have you thrown out into the street." Flora was not exactly thrown out into the street, I believe, but she was bundled bag and baggage on board a steamer for London. Did I tell you these people lived in Hamburg? Well, yes, sent to the docks late on a rainy winter evening in charge of some sneering lackey or other who behaved to her insolently, and left her on deck burning with indignation, her hair half down, shaking with excitement, and, truth to say, scared as near as possible into hysterics. If it had not been for the stewardess who, without asking questions, good soul, took charge of her quietly in the ladies' saloon, luckily it was empty, it is by no means certain she would ever have reached England. I can't tell if a straw ever saved a drowning man, but I know that a mere glance is enough to make despair pause. For in truth, we who are creatures of impulse are not creatures of despair. Suicide, I suspect, is very often the outcome of mere mental weariness, not an act of savage energy, but the final symptom of complete collapse. The quiet, matter-of-fact attentions of a ship's stewardess, who did not seem aware of other human agonies than seasickness, who talked of the probable weather of the passage, it would be a rough night, she thought, and who insisted in a professionally busy manner, "Let me make you comfortable down below at once, miss," as though she were thinking of nothing else but her tip was enough to dissipate the shades of death gathering round the mortal weariness of bewildered thinking which makes the idea of non-existence welcome so often to the young. Flora de Barrel did lie down, and it may be presumed she slept. At any rate, she survived the voyage across the North Sea, and told Mrs. Fine all about it, concealing nothing and receiving no rebuke, for Mrs. Fine's opinions had a large freedom in their pedantry. She held, I suppose, that a woman holds an absolute right, or possesses a perfect excuse to escape in her own way from a man-mismanaged world. What is to be noted is that even in London, having had time to take a reflective view, poor Flora was far from being certain as to the true inwardness of her violent dismissal. She felt the humiliation of it with an almost maddened resentment. "And did you enlighten her on the point?" I ventured to ask. Mrs. Fine moved her shoulders with a philosophical acceptance of all the necessities which ought not to be. "Something had to be said," she murmured. As he had told the girl enough to make her come to the right conclusion by herself. "And she did?" "Yes. Of course. She isn't a goose," retorted Mrs. Fine tartly. "Then her education is completed," I remarked with some bitterness. "Don't you think she ought to be given a chance?" Mrs. Fine understood my meaning. "Not this one," she snapped in a quite feminine way. "'Tis all very well for you to plead, but I do not plead. I simply asked. It seemed natural to ask what you thought. It's what I feel that matters. And I can't help my feelings. You may guess, she added in a softer tone, that my feelings are mostly concerned with my brother. We were very fond of each other. The difference of our ages was not very great. I suppose you know he is a little younger than I am. He was a sensitive boy. He had the habit of brooding. It is no use concealing from you that neither of us was happy at home. You have heard, no doubt. Yes? Well, I was made still more unhappy, and heard I don't mind telling you that. He made his way to some distant relations of our mother's people who I believe were not known to my father at all. I don't wish to judge their action. I interrupted Mrs. Fine here. I had heard. Fine was not very communicative in general, but he was proud of his father-in-law Carlyon Anthony, the poet, you know. Proud of his celebrity without approving of his character. It was on that account, I strongly suspect, that he seized with avidity upon the theory of poetical genius, being allied to madness, which he got hold of in some idiotic book everybody was reading a few years ago. It struck him as being truth itself illuminating like the sun. He adopted it devoutly. He bored me with it sometimes. Once, just to shut him up, I asked quietly if this theory which he regarded as so incontrovertible did not cause him some uneasiness about his wife and the dear girls. He transfixed me with a pitying stare, and requested me in his deep solemn voice to remember the ill-established fact that genius was not transmissible. I said only H, isn't it? And he thought he had silenced me by an unanswerable argument. But he continued to talk of his glorious father-in-law, and it was in the course of that conversation that he told me how, when the Liverpool relations of the poet's late wife naturally addressed themselves to him in considerable concern, suggesting a friendly consultation as to the boy's future, the incensed but always refined poet wrote in answer a letter of mere polished badinage which offended mortally the Liverpool people. This witty outbreak of what was in fact mortification and rage appeared to them so heartless, that they simply kept the boy. They let him go to sea, not because he was in their way, but because he begged hard to be allowed to go. Oh, you do know, said Mrs. Fine after a pause. I felt myself very much abandoned. Then his choice of life so extraordinary, so unfortunate, I may say. I was very much grieved. I should have liked him to have been distinguished, or at any rate, to remain in the social sphere, where we could have had common interests, acquaintances, thoughts. Don't think that I am estranged from him. But the precise truth is that I do not know him. I was most painfully affected when he was here by the difficulty of finding a single topic we could discuss together. While Mrs. Fine was talking of her brother, I let my thoughts wander out of the room to little Fine, who, by leaving me alone with his wife, had, so to speak, entrusted his domestic peace to my honor. Well, then, Mrs. Fine, does it not strike you that it would be reasonable under the circumstances to let your brother take care of himself? And suppose I have grounds to think that he can't take care of himself in a given instance. She hesitated in a funny, bashful manner which roused my interest. Then, sailors I believe are very susceptible, she added with forced assurance. I burst into a laugh which only increased the coldness of her observing stare. They are. Immensely. Hopelessly. My dear Mrs. Fine, you had better give it up. It only makes your husband miserable. And I am quite miserable too. It is really our first difference. Regarding Mr. Barrel? I asked. Regarding everything. It's really intolerable that this girl should be the occasion. I think he really ought to give way. She turned her chair around a little, and picking up the book I had been reading in the morning began to turn the leaves absently. Her eyes being off me, I felt I could allow myself to leave the room. Its atmosphere had become hopeless for little Fine's domestic peace. You may smile. But to the solemn all things are solemn. I had enough sagacity to understand that. I slipped out into the porch. The dog was slumbering at Fine's feet. The muscular little man leaning on his elbow and gazing over the fields presented a forlorn figure. He turned his head quickly, but seeing I was alone, relapsed into his moody contemplation of the green landscape. I said loudly and distinctly, "I've come out to smoke a cigarette," and sat down near him on the little bench. Then lowering my voice, "Tolerance is an extremely difficult virtue," I said. "More difficult for some than heroism. More difficult than compassion." I avoided looking at him. I knew well enough that he would not like this opening. General ideas were not to his taste. He mistrusted them. I lighted a cigarette, not that I wanted to smoke, but to give another moment to the consideration of the advice, the diplomatic advice I had made up my mind to bowl him over with. And I continued in subdued tones, "I have been led to make these remarks by what I have discovered since you left us. I suspected from the first, and now I am certain. What your wife cannot tolerate in this affair is Mr. Barrel, being what she is." He made a movement, but I kept my eyes away from him, and went on steadily. "Had as her being a woman. I have some idea of Mrs. Fine's mental attitude towards society with its injustices, with its atrocious or ridiculous conventions. As against them there is no audacity of action your wife's mind refuses to sanction. The doctrine which I imagine she stuffs into the pretty heads of your girl guests is almost vengeful. A sort of moral fire and sword doctrine. How far the lesson is wise is not for me to say. I don't permit myself to judge. I seem to see her very delightful disciples singeing themselves with the torches, and cutting their fingers with the swords of Mrs. Fine's furnishing." "My wife holds her opinions very seriously," murmured Fine suddenly. "Yes. No doubt," I assented in a low voice as before. "But it is a mere intellectual exercise. What I see is that in dealing with reality Mrs. Fine ceases to be tolerant. In other words, that she can't forgive Mr. Barrel for being a woman and behaving like a woman. And yet this is not only reasonable and natural, but it is her only chance. A woman against the world has no resources but in herself. Her only means of action is to be what she is. You understand what I mean?" Fine mumbled between his teeth that he understood. But he did not seem interested. What he expected of me was to extricate him from a difficult situation. I don't know how far credible this may sound to less solemn married couples, but to remain at variance with his wife seemed to him a considerable incident. Almost a disaster. "It looks as though I didn't care what happened to her brother," he said. "Andy after all if anything." I became a little impatient, but without raising my tone. "What thing?" I asked. "He liability to get penal servitude is so far like genius that it isn't hereditary. And what else can be objected to the girl? All the energy of her deeper feelings, which she would use up vainly in the danger and fatigue of a struggle with society, may be turned into devoted attachment to the man who offers her a way of escape from what can be only a life of moral anguish. I don't mention the physical difficulties." Glancing at Fine out of the corner of one eye, I discovered that he was attentive. He made the remark that I should have said all this to his wife. It was a sensible enough remark. But I had given Mrs. Fine up. I asked him if his impression was that his wife meant to entrust him with a letter for her brother? No. He didn't think so. There were certain reasons which made Mrs. Fine unwilling to commit her arguments to paper. Fine was to be primed with them. But he had no doubt that, if he persisted in his refusal, she would make up her mind to write. "She does not wish me to go, unless with a full conviction that she is right," said Fine solemnly. "She's very exacting," I commented. And then I reflected that she was used to it. "All nothing less do for once? You don't mean that I should give way, do you?" asked Fine in a whisper of alarmed suspicion. As this was exactly what I meant, I let his fright sink into him. He fidgeted. If the word may be used of so solemn a personage, he wriggled. And when the horrid suspicion had descended into his very heels, so to speak, he became very still. He sat gazing stonily into space bounded by the yellow, burned-up slopes of the rising ground a couple of miles away. The face of the down showed the white scar of the quarry, where not more than 16 hours before Fine and I had been groping in the dark with horrible apprehension of finding under our hands the shattered body of a girl. For myself I had in addition the memory of my meeting with her. She was certainly walking very near the edge courting a sinister solution. But now, having by the most unexpected chance come upon a man, she had found another way to escape from the world. Such world as was open to her without shelter, without bread, without honor. The best she could have found in it would have been a precarious dole of pity diminishing as her years increased. The appeal of the abandoned child Flora to the sympathies of the Fines had been irresistible. But now S.E. had become a woman, and Mrs. Fine was presenting an implacable front to a particularly feminine transaction. I may say triumphantly feminine. It is true that Mrs. Fine did not want women to be women. Her theory was that they should turn themselves into unscrupulous sexless nuisances. An offended theorist dwelt in her bosom somewhere. In what way she expected Flora de Barrel to set about saving herself from a most miserable existence I can't conceive, but I verify believe that she would have found it easier to forgive the girl an actual crime, say the rifling of the Bournemouth old lady's desk, for instance. And then for Mrs. Fine was very much of a woman herself, her sense of proprietorship was very strong within her. And though as he had not much use for her brother, yet she did not like to see him annexed by another woman. By a chit of a girl. And such a girl too. Nothing is truer than that. In this world, the luckless have no right to their opportunities, as if misfortune were a legal disqualification. Fine sentiments, as they naturally would be in a man, had more stability. A good deal of his sympathy survived. Indeed, I heard a murmur, hastily nuisance, but I knew it was of the integrity of his domestic accord that he was thinking. With my eyes on the dog lying curled up in sleep in the middle of the porch, I suggested in a subdued impersonal tone, S. Why not let yourself be persuaded? I never saw Little Fine less solemn. He hissed through his teeth in unexpectedly figurative style that it would take a lot to persuade him to hush under the head of a poor devil of a girl quite sufficiently plucky, and snorted. He was still gazing at the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.